Regions believes that being a bank means serving the community. Regions is shining the light on local food banks as they feed our neighbors in need. See how you can help at regions.com/foodbank. The Regions branches are open by drive-thru or lobby appointment only. Bank safely and securely from almost anywhere with Regions online banking or mobile banking. Data rates may apply. Regions Bank. Member FDIC.
The Duly Noted Podcast is brought to you by Vistar Credit Union. We never forget that it's your money. And ABC Fine Wine and Spirits. Always be celebrating.
This is the Duly Noted Podcast. Everything Florida Gators with your host, Pat Dooley.
Okay, welcome into another edition of the Duly Noted Podcast. Appreciate everybody for clicking on. I know the podcast got up a little late last, the early one, mainly because we had an issue with we had to do a read for an advertiser and it got messed up. It was my fault. Anyway, so you feel like you're listening to them back to back probably. Obviously, Florida Georgia is just, I mean, it's huge. It is as big a Florida Georgia game as I can remember because of where we are in this season, in terms of Florida, the winner of this game has a game and a half lead, basically, and is in great shape and probably is going to win the East. The loser, who knows where their season goes. And that can happen. Both teams have some tough games left. Who knows where your season goes from there? So, I mean, you can't worry about that right now. All you're worried about is the Florida-Georgia game. You know, a lot has been made of Georgia's won three in a row. And I just want to set the record straight here. First of all, they won three in a row with Jake Fromm at quarterback. And one reason Gator fans have optimism is because Jake Fromm's not a quarterback. He was obviously really good as a freshman. He had a great season. But they could have beaten him with anybody at quarterback. Because Florida, that was the day that, you know, the story broke about McElwain was going to get fired, and we all knew it was coming, you know, and the players knew it was coming. They didn't show up to play. The next year, he was unbelievable, Jake Fromm. Three touchdown passes, and Florida was hung in there with them, but they couldn't win that game. And then the following year, he threw for 270-something yards, actually outperformed Kyle Trask. Florida offensively didn't get things going and didn't get many possessions. And give him credit. They played at a very high level. So they won three in a row. Right before that, Florida won three in a row. And in fact, if you take away the must-champ years, and I always say that because there are people who believe that Will Muschamp was a plant. Conspiracy theorists who believe that Georgia sent him here to lose to him. I can tell you, if Will Muschamp had a fault, is maybe that he didn't value that game more than any other game. And that was Will's personality. Georgia mattered. Auburn mattered. LSU mattered. They all mattered the same. FAU mattered. And I think that after Urban, and Urban was great at making those rivalry games a bigger deal. Spurrier was great at making that Georgia game a bigger deal because it stuck in his craw. But he didn't, you know, even then Spurrier didn't do anything extraordinary during the week. It burned inside of him more than anything. But remember, if you take out those must-champ years, Florida was on a 20-4 run until this streak that they got on, Georgia got on. And again, I don't count the first game. To me, it's a two-game winning streak. Because the first game, Florida didn't even want to be there, didn't want to show up. And that's the thing, though, about this series. You forget. It's whoever's won the most games in the most recent. So you've won three in a row. That's, that sticks in Florida's craw. It's oh, man, can we beat Georgia? Well, yeah, you can beat Georgia. You beat them 20 out of 24 games at one point. It's not impossible. But the thing about the Florida-Georgia game and maybe you won't agree with me on this, is no game overall, if you take it into a total package, has caused more pain for Gator fans than Florida-Georgia. Now, I know you could say, well, you know, that Tennessee game when Rex Grossman lost the Heisman and in 2001, and they would have gone to the national championship game. Yeah. And they stormed the fence in 98, knocked it down after they won in overtime. That was painful. Yeah. FSU in Tallahassee, the war game. Spurrier not being able to beat him in Tallahassee. The choke at Doak. Yeah. But if you're a longtime Gator, if you've been around it a long time, nothing has caused you more pain than Georgia. There was a time when you wondered if Florida could ever beat Georgia. I mean, the Spurrier game, obviously. The 1968 game is a game, and I want to talk about this real quickly. But in that game, Ray Graves changed his offensive and defensive coordinators. He flipped them. And they lost 51-0 in the rain. It did not go well, obviously. But that was the game when, because people have been asking me, I don't know how many of you saw the Carlos Alvarez special, which was tremendous. I loved it. I was riveted. But if you saw that, you're probably, and if you weren't around and don't know the whole story, you're probably wondering why Ray Graves got let go after that year and kicked upstairs to athletic director. You're probably befuddled by it. How could that happen? How could that have happened? Certainly the players were befuddled by it. That's where the whole athlete's right thing started that Carlos was known for. So I'm going to tell you exactly, and it goes back to the 1968 Georgia game. That's where it started. But first, I have to take a break. We'll do that. We'll come back. I'll tell you about that and also how Florida will beat Georgia if they do. How Florida can beat Georgia, I guess I should make that. We will get to the spreads and, of course, three things. All that and Chip Towers from the AJC is going to join us as well. We'll take a break. Be right back with more of the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com.
At Vistar, we believe in better, especially in helping build a better financial future for our members. So we've lowered or eliminated over half our fees and enhanced our already competitive rates, saving members more than $1 million this year in addition to the millions we save them every year. If you believe that saving money is better, join Vistar. We never forget that it's your money. Proud partner of the Florida Gators. All loans subject to approval, insured by NCUA.
Seems like with everything that's going on in the world today, we all just need a moment to chill out. There's only one beer that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. Over the last few months, we've gone from no sports anywhere to sports on television everywhere. Coors Light is the official beer of watching any sport or any team. So whether you're watching the Gators, Crimson Tide, Fighting Irish, or Lawn Bowling Championship, crack open the mountain cold refreshment of a Coors Light. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, a perfect moment to unwind. Make sure your refrigerator is always stocked with plenty of Coors Light. Get Coors Light in the new look, delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. So the next time life forces are coming at you hard, take a moment, stop and reset, and reach for a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment, made to chill. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Bring game day tailgates home this season after a stop at ABC Fine Wine and Spirits. Stock up your huddle with beer, hard seltzers, your favorite wine, or something sparkling. ABC is Florida family owned and has been getting Gator fans ready for kickoff since 1936. Head inside one of their 125 stores around the state or try their curbside service by ordering online at abcfws.com. ABC Access loyalty members can save $10 on wine, 10% on beer and hard seltzers, and earn points toward $5 coupons. ABC, always be celebrating.
For some of you, you know the whole story and you get it, but This is what happened. 1968 was supposed to be the year of the Gator. And this was back when Florida kind of had this saying, wait till next year. And, you know, even in Spurrier's Heisman year, they won the Orange Bowl, but it still wasn't what they wanted. They didn't win the championship. So 68, Larry Smith is a senior, great running back, one of the best to ever play at Florida. They've got a veteran team. This is the year of the Gator. They were ready. Then they went up to North Carolina, raining, fumbled like seven times. I think they lost that game. I don't have a media guy with me. I think it was 22-7 is my memory, but it might have been a different score. It doesn't matter. They lost that game, and things weren't going well, and he flipped. Ray Graves flipped the offensive and defensive coordinators. They lost 51-0. In retrospect, it seems like one of the dumbest things ever to do that. Why would you put your offensive coordinator in charge of your defense and vice versa? And that's when the movement kind of began to get Ray Graves out. They felt like he had done all he could at Florida. He had he'd won a lot of big games. Obviously, he had their first Heisman Trophy winner. But they wanted to win a championship. They wanted to win an SEC championship. And Stephen O'Connell, you know, was a big part of that as well. And I shan't call it the O'Connell Center anymore after watching that documentary. There was already some reasons not to. It is now Exact Tech Arena in my stories. I will tell you that much. But they made a deal with Graves before the season. This will be your last year. We'll give you a nice cushy job as athletic director. And, you know, this is going to be it no matter what happens. They weren't expecting 9-1-1, which is what Florida went. When they went 9-1-1, Graves wanted to renege on the deal. He actually wanted to come back. Look at these sophomores I've got. They're going to be juniors next year. I want to coach John Reese and Carlos Alvarez and Tommy Durrance and Mike Rich and all these guys. We've got to go in the right direction. But the deal had been done. The deal had been struck. And they wanted him out. And so they bring in Doug Dickey. Things didn't go well. He eventually ended up with one of the best teams to ever play at Florida in 1975. But the year later, fourth and dumb. Another painful Georgia memory. Earlier, he had lost in 75, the year before, on a tight end around pass. Richard Appleby to Gene Washington. Painful, painful day in the Gator Bowl. 10-7 final. Those were all, and of course, we all know about Lindsey Scott. I'm not going to talk about Lindsey Scott. I love Lindsey Scott. He's a good guy. I love Buck Ballew. But that was the most painful memory in the history of Florida football. And if I'm listing the 10 most painful memories in the history of Florida football, there are four or five Georgia games in there. And so there's a lot of people right now who are old-time Gator fans, and they look at this game set up really well for Florida. They've got injuries, Georgia does, on defense. Florida's got an offense that doesn't seem stoppable. You know, it's pressure's on both coaches, but you like the Gators. They've got everybody back. Looks good. But it lingers. It lingers back in there. I was in the stands in 1968. My dad said, "We're not leaving." I said, "Why?" He said, "I want to see if Florida can score." They did not. I was there in 66 when Lynn Hughes and Bill Stanfield just beat Spurrier to a pulp. I was there for Lindsey Scott. Run, Lindsey, run. And I was there for a lot of losses. The 85 loss. Talk about painful losses. Florida's number one for the first time ever. Lasted 5 days. Just didn't play well. Georgia played at a high level, and that's what Georgia used to always do. Georgia would play that game at a different level than Florida. The 70s and 80s, especially, even the 60s. Then along came Steve, and things got different. And Florida played the game at a different level, and Florida did things that even when maybe sometimes they weren't the best team, you know, 92, you can make that argument, 93. But certainly the year that Lito Shepherd had that pick and ran it almost all the way back, Georgia was driving down the field. And they were about to go up 24-9. And Lito came off his man, stepped in front of Quincy Carter pass, ran it back all the way to like the 10 or 12, I don't remember what yard line, and Florida wins the game, ends up winning the game. They score, get a two-point conversion, and dominate the second half. So anyway, this is a long-winded way of telling you that it's – I have a lot of memories of this game. In fact, my favorite memory might be the 2008 game. After the stomp, the Georgia stomp the year before, and Florida destroyed them, just destroyed them. And Urban called the timeouts. And there were people in the press box, national media, going, that's low class, blah, blah, blah. I go, nah. He just told Georgia, we're not letting you go home yet. We're not letting you go in and shower and get on a bus and go catch a plane home. We're going to make you stay around a little while. I loved it personally. And again, you know, a lot of people didn't like Urban Meyer, but they liked him that day. I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it real quickly. I was having dinner with Urban and Tebow and Phil Troutwein at SEC Media Days. And Urban had this dream where they're killing Georgia. And he tells Tebow, hey, roll out to the right, throw the ball as hard as you can into the Georgia section, just scatter people. And, you know, that was a dream he had. So he told his wife that, and then he told – later on, he told Tebow. He said, I had this dream where I had you throw the ball into their section and just scatter them. We're way up on them. And Tebow goes, let's do it. He goes, no. And he when Florida decided – you know, they've got their backups in, but he wanted to go back in so he could do that. But no, we're not going to do that. Instead, we'll just make them hang around. So that's right up there is one of my favorite memories. Certainly, I think the 90 and 91, but I tell you another one is 96, because if you remember, Ike Hillier was suspended for that game, and then Jeff Mitchell went down early in that game with a broken ankle and never played for Florida again. And it just felt like everything was going wrong, and Florida just destroyed them. No problem. That's what they used to do, especially to the goofer. 95 was, oh, yeah. God, I would. It was one of my favorite weeks of my life. Covered the World Series, Braves, the first two games. Went to Athens, spent a week, blast. Florida destroys them. Watched the Braves win the World Series in a bar. That's right up there. And my girlfriend at the time was there too. Now my wife. All right, so, you know, and I do kind of miss the old Gator Bowl, even though it was a dump. It was an absolute dump, okay? But the smells that would come through, I remember being in the south end zone in the 73 game where Lee McGriff made the unbelievable catch and Hank Fulberg caught the two-point conversion and Florida beat him 11-10. I remember being there, and right before that drive started, all the smells of the game came at me, and they're not good smells. It's Maxwell Health's coffee. It's a pulp mill. It's, you know, cheap bourbon. It's cigar smoke. It's back when you could smoke cigars in the stands. And it was just this wafting smell. And it wasn't a good smell, but you know what it said to me? Florida, Georgia. So in a way, it was cool. I kind of liked it. And I can close my eyes and smell it. You know, it's there. So I do kind of miss that. But, of course, obviously you had to tear it down if you're going to bring an NFL team and try to play games in that stadium. That place was an absolute dump. It was one of the worst stadiums I've ever been in. You know, the urinals overflowing and everything. But there was that smell too. Still, I did kind of like it. All right. I'm going to tell you how Florida's going to win this game or how they can win the game. I'm not saying they're going to win the game. fact, I'm kind of leaning towards Georgia because I'm a prove it guy. You got to show me you can win, you can beat Georgia. Until you do, got to beat the champs to be the champs, right? Number one, stop the run. This goes without saying. I think we all know that. Number two, no bus in the secondary. Do not have bus in the secondary. Don't give them cheap points. If they run past you and they run over you and they're able to do things, or they're able to do a 12 play drive and pick up big third downs, okay, that's just the way it goes. Don't give them easy touchdowns. Don't give them easy points. Number three, stop the run. I'm gonna say this a few more times. Number four, which is a huge part of it, is give Kyle Trask time. If they can protect Kyle Trask, they will, as good as their secondary is, Florida will come up with plays and they'll find ways, because almost everything Florida runs are their option routes. So sometimes they have one play, they'll run it seven times, but with totally different routes. The route tree is different. Like, okay, if I go out this way and that guy does this, then I've got to do this. So they'll find a way. Number five, stop the run. Number six, have some explosive plays and limit the explosive plays. And I know I already said no bust in the secondary, but you got to try to limit the explosive plays, and you've got to have explosive plays. Now, Georgia's not known for their explosive plays. This team isn't. But you've got to have some of your own. And here's another key. Get ahead early. You know, Florida in the first half of this game under Dan Mullen has not been very good. I think they scored 7 or 10 in the 2 years ago and 3 points in the first three quarters last year. They've got to do a better job of getting off to a good start. Make Georgia doubt themselves with the guys they have out. Make them question whether they can get it done defensively. Make them wonder about their quarterback. That, to me, is one of the big keys of this game. And obviously, one of the other keys, play at a high level. We talked about that before. You've got to play at a high level. This is a big game. There are games when you don't have to play at a high level and you can win. But in this SEC-only season, it's going to be hard to do that in any game. You've got to play at a higher level than maybe you thought you had in you. Can they do it? Dan Mullen said, our guys like playing in big games. Okay? This is the biggest game of the year by far. There won't be another bigger game unless you win and get through the East and you get to Atlanta. Then that'll be a bigger game because you'll be playing for a college football playoff berth. But during the regular season, there's not going to be a bigger game than this. This is a game we've talked about all summer, even in the spring, before COVID, during COVID. I don't know if there will ever be an after COVID. This is the game. Don't play at a higher level, but don't do things you're not asked to do. Don't get out of gaps. These are all the keys to winning this game. And I'm pretty much, this is what I'm going to write for Saturday's paper. So if you listen to the podcast, you may say, hey, he already said that. Sorry. All right. We got to get a break, and we're going to bring in Chip Towers from the AJC and talk about the Georgia Bulldogs. Always great talking to him. He's been friends for such a long time. One of the best in the business. We'll take that break and then we'll come back. And when we do return on the other side of the other side, we'll get to the spreads and the, three things. You're listening to the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com. The Duly Noted Podcast is brought to you by Vistar Credit Union. We never forget that it's your money. And ABC Fine Wine and Spirits. Always be celebrating. All right, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast. It's my great pleasure to bring in a longtime friend, Chip Towers from the AJC. Covers the Georgia Bulldogs, and Chip just got off the golf course, so I can hear the sweat, you know, just trickling down your cheek. But obviously, this is going to be a weird Florida-Georgia game with no tailgating and 18,000 fans, 9,000 from each side. I don't know if it's going to have any influence on the actual game, because I think these guys are all used to playing in front of no fans.
Yeah, it's interesting. The atmosphere down there is such a big part of the game, and that's what's so hard to explain to people. You know, there's still a lot of detractors about whether Georgia and Florida should even still be doing this in Jacksonville, not just in the COVID year, but in any year. But I think one of the unique things about it is because, you know, usually there's 40,000 for each school there, so there's always noise as opposed to being loud and quiet the way you have in a true home and away game. It's loud and loud all the time. Certainly, we've all been to games now with the social distancing, and it's not as loud, and they try to pipe in some. I don't know if they're going to pipe in any for this one, but, I think you're right, Pat. I think that the players at this point are pretty used to it. Once you get out there and start playing a couple of plays, man, it's just all about the competition on the field. And I think that's kind of good. And in this year in particular, the Georgia-Florida matchup being as good as I think it is, I mean, and let's face it, it's been good the last 2 years, too, a top-10 matchup. But, you know, the strong where others weak and weak where others strong and all that kind of stuff, I think it's good that it's kind of almost like a neutral site. You know, there's no clear advantage for either team. This is going to be decided, you know, straight out on the field.
Yeah, no question about that. Also, you know, I don't know where they are injury-wise, what you've heard the latest on it. Obviously, LeCount being out is a big factor. Jordan Davis, I don't know if he's going to play or not. I've heard reports that he's not. Certainly a very good player, a huge player. Rochester out. Those are big blows for that defense, aren't they?
It is. Let me simplify for it, because there's a lot of, you know, I mean, hey, we're halfway through, you know, an all SEC season, so all teams are beat up at this point. Actually, this will sound funny, but I almost think it's kind of worked in Florida's favor, with all those guys out with COVID, just getting a little time to heal, you know, the other guys to heal during that time. Now, I know Missouri was plenty of a slobber knocker game, but, you know, Georgia's pretty beat up right now, but the only injuries that matter out of all those is Jordan Davis and the Richard LeCount situation, and they're both huge. Now, Jordan Davis, Kirby keeps insisting that he's going to play. It's one of those deals, you know this, Pat, we get less access than we ever did. Now we don't see him at all during the week. So he used to have a pretty good idea, and now you can't go by anything but what the coach is saying. And the reality is you can't believe anything Kirby says, you know, so – he says there's a chance Jordan can play, or there could be a role for him. You know, behind the scenes, there's talk of these. It's an elbow injury of there possibly being a break in there and everything else. I mean, Jordan Davis is 6'6", 330 pounds, generous at 330, but it's a good 330, as you know. You know, yeah. It's that mature junior 330, NFL draft prospect 330. And if he can't go like Jordan Davis normally goes, that changes a lot. Richard LeCount is also huge. I mean, he's an All-American safety and is just playing out of his mind this year. I mean, just playing really, really well, almost like a corner at safety. Obviously, you know, those guys, the safeties are heavily involved with the defending tight ends like Kyle Pitts, not that anybody can truly defend him, but... You know, taking him out of the equation is big. All the rest of it is wind address in Georgia. Georgia defense is, as advertised, it's extremely deep. Five-star guys all around the place, but there's really not anybody that's going to replace Jordan Davis or Richard LeCount. So I'm most intrigued on seeing what Jordan Davis does. And then Richard LeCount's being replaced by a junior named Christopher Smith, who hadn't played much before this year, but he's played a lot this year. He's definitely pretty good. They got a lot of confidence in him, but there's going to be a drop-off there.
You know, I think a lot of people are wondering if Kirby will make some kind of a change at quarterback, or at least have, you know, run in Dewan Mathis for some running plays or something. But what's your gut, knowing him the way you do, whether they'll – I mean, he's not going to pull a Fat Town Bada, you know, this year. But I think there's a chance that he might play another guy.
You know, yeah, I started grinning as soon as you were asking that, because, the Fatone Bauta year is one that will live in infamy, right? I mean, just forever, and really, really cost Mark Richt his job, that decision. And I get it, and I still don't think it was a bad decision if you just don't stick with him all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just like, when have you seen enough here, you know? And he's a great guy. Fatone Bauta is a great human being and all that kind of stuff. And that's right up there with Fourth and Dumb. And, on the Georgia side of things. And so that said, I mean, Kirby's just, you know, Kirby's a risk taker in kind of some weird ways. And sometimes the most inopportune times. So maybe this could happen. But I really think that at this point, midway in the season, with the SEC East on the line, and seeing everything that they're seeing in practice and that we're not seeing, I think, you know, Stetson Bennett, they truly believe in their heart of hearts is their best chance of, you know, winning. I tell people all the time, it's not a conspiracy. It's not a good old boy network. These guys get paid $6 and $7 million a year, and they're, their livelihoods are on the line. They're playing the guy they think that can win, and I think that's Stetson Bennett. Now, there could be a plan to bring in Dewan Mathis, A, as a change-up, or B, if it just continues to go bad, because Stetson Bennett's, you know, 5 interceptions, 2 TDs in the last 2 games, and is really struggling with those line-of-scrimmage bat-downs. I think there might be a shorter leash than usual, but I mean, Kirby's leash been pretty doggone long so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, the stat that everybody talks about, 14 straight years that the winner of the game has had the most rushing yards. Sometimes that's skewed because the team that's ahead rush tends to run the ball a little bit more. But what do you, for Georgia with that offensive line they've got, it, you know, everybody's going to wait and see how Georgia is able to run the ball and if Florida is able to stop it as being the key to the game. But and they've done a great job when they've needed to. But I watched that Kentucky game, and I'm like, it kind of cooled off the running game after a fast start.
Yeah, they did. I tell you, Pat, I hadn't called this right yet. I mean, going into the Kentucky game, look, Georgia was never going to lose that game, you know, going in. And so I was curious going into the game because Georgia had struggled so much with explosive plays and explosive offense and spread and all those things that Todd Monken were supposed to bring to the table. And I'm not criticizing him yet because, I mean, he, you know, 9 new starters, right? I was curious coming out of the Alabama game, do they just slog it and get the victory and move on to Jacksonville against Kentucky, or do they try to work on those explosive plays? Well, I didn't know at the time George Pickens was going to be out. Technically, we don't know if he's going to be in for this game or not. I'm still perplexed by all that. Certainly George Pickens makes a difference, but I don't think Georgia can just line up. I'm really curious about Florida's defense. Maybe you can tell me a little bit more about it. I don't have a strong handle on what they are really this year. I know their yardage and their stats and that kind of stuff, but it's such a weird year, and I know they've had so many people out. And I think Georgia's got to try to take some chances. They got to do a little bit more. The good news, if you're a Georgia fan, is, I mean, I don't think you showed, you know, Florida anything, you know, in the Kentucky game. I mean, other than that, here's a zone read left, and here's a zone read right, and, you know, here's a couple little wiggles and play actions here and there. But that was kind of it. And so maybe they got some stuff up their sleeve, but I definitely don't see a Fatone Bauta situation where they start, you know, somebody that hadn't started or play somebody extensively that hasn't played to this point.
Last thing for you, Chip, and we appreciate your time. You know, talking to the coaches on the conference call and, of course, talking to Dan on Tuesday, you know, they basically both said the same thing. They know what Georgia's going to do. Georgia knows what they're going to do. It's going to come down to who executes the best. That's simple.
Yes.
It's not like there's any crazy, you know, theories here. It's going to be who does what they do best, the best.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely right. And you know, and then, of course, you know, I think special teams will figure into things they always do when it's that clear cut. Look, I really like Florida's offense. I really like what Dan Mullen is doing with the offense. You know, I think Kyle Trask gives Florida a huge edge. And in big games like this, you know, quarterback play is so huge. And look, Jake Fromm, say what you want about it. I mean, around here, Jake Fromm's name is almost mud again. It's so strange, you know, because he wasn't Justin Fields. That he didn't take him to a national championship, but he was pretty doggone solid, and he was real solid against Florida.
Really good against Florida, yeah.
All three of his – yeah. I mean, quarterback play is so important in this game, in games like this. You know, it's a top-10 matchup, and so I think that's a huge edge. And when you add in, you know, Kadarius Toney and Kyle Pitts and the other factors, you know, that's tough to overcome. So Georgia's defense has got to play out of its mind, and they're beat up. So, I really don't like the matchup for Georgia overall. But it's the cocktail party, baby, and yeah. It's a weird one. Anything can happen. You know, I don't know if we're back in the 1970s and 80s now when Georgia wins anyway despite all odds, or we're back, you know, about to head back into the 90s when Florida's just going to win, and that's just the way it is. It's probably somewhere in between, and I like, you know, I like Florida's chances this year, and should be a great game. That's the good news about it. I think it should be a very entertaining game.
He is Chip Towers from the AJC, and you can read his stuff at AJC.com. And any other plugs you want to put in here?
Hey, C Towers AJC is my Twitter. And, you know, Pat, you do a great job. I'm glad you're still doing your job. Nowadays, nothing's certain, you know. And, you know, I just look forward to you know, talking to you again and figuring out what these teams really are. Because truth is, man, we don't know. We're at the halfway point, and everybody, I think, is still trying to figure everybody else out. So this should be a real telling game, I think.
Yeah, we're about to find out. We'll be back with more of the Duly Noted Podcast right after this break. Okay, you know, we had another game canceled today, I think it was. Yeah. It's just a shame. And you see this happening all around the college football world. You know, Wisconsin, I don't know if Wisconsin's going to play enough games even to qualify for the Big Ten championship game. It's just the way it is. And it's contact tracing, it's quarantines and all that. Florida did have no positive test the other day. We'll see but again, I'm sure that they're nervous about Friday morning when they hand them that sheet that tells them guys who tested positive and didn't test positive. I know they're doing everything they can to keep it from happening, but you know, for example, you know, Texas A&M, two guys get on a plane that have it. They had tested negative before, but they had it. They've gotten it since their test. And infected, really, that's where the plane is where most of that happened. You know, guys eating on a plane, because your masks are off, right, when you're eating. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about some of the spreads. And I'll start with the big game of the week, which is Clemson-Notre Dame. I mean, look, in our little world, Florida-Georgia is big, and I think Florida-Georgia is the second biggest game in the country. I don't think there's any question, but Clemson-Notre Dame is huge. This is a loser-go-home type of game, although the loser will have another chance to come back and beat in the championship game, you would think. But Clemson's a 5.5-point favorite. And it's funny to think about. I wonder how much big a favorite Clemson would be with Trevor Lawrence. You know, without him, they're a 5.5-point favorite on the road, and again, not a big crowd or anything, but it's pretty amazing. It shows you what people think of Clemson. And their backup quarterback's really good. I'm not even going to try to say his name. I'm going to work on it. When I get good at it, I'll let you know. Ulungalali. I think that's close. But that's how good Clemson is. That's how well they've recruited. They feel like they're, you know, the experts. And I think people are not sold on Notre Dame yet. And I'm one of them. I'm not sold on Notre Dame. It'll be an interesting game, and I'm curious. We'll see what happens. But I'm not sold on them. Of course, Georgia, 3.5-point favorite over Florida, started out at 5, came down a little bit, probably will settle in right there. Does it mean anything? No. And again, I think this goes back to what I was talking about. If you haven't beaten Georgia in the last 3 years, it's going to be hard to pick Florida. But I think a lot of people will pick. I think when you see like the so-called experts, you know, the game day guys, and we love Reese Davis to death, you know, guys on other channels, when I say so-called experts, I mean, nobody's an expert. Nobody gets everything right. I guarantee you 95% of them are going to pick Clemson. But I think Florida, Georgia, it'll be split. I think you'll see half the people say they're taking the Gators. Half the people are going to say they're taking Georgia. And I think that's where I feel. I feel like this is a toss-up game, totally a toss-up game. Texas A&M, a 10-point favorite over South Carolina. Well, who knows if South Carolina, what team's going to show up there. Again, I said I thought this was a pretty good team. And then they went out and they smoked Auburn. And then I said, man, I tell you what, that is a good team. They're not that far away. And then they just embarrass themselves against LSU, the team that has embarrassed itself more than anybody this year. So I wouldn't. Oh boy, I would stay away from this. Again, I'm not encouraging or betting or anything. But if I was betting it, I would not, because A&M might blow them out, or South Carolina could play again. One of these crazy games where they play great, you know, wow, Will Muschamp's got it turned around. It's hard to figure out. Stanford's getting 9 at Oregon. Oregon, I was talking about this with Jeff the other day. I thought I had Oregon in my preseason top 4. And I didn't research it very well. I just knew that some of the players they had that I really liked. And then a bunch of guys opted out, and then I started researching a little more, and I realized Oregon's probably not going to be that good. The Pac-12 starts this week, and I'm not overwhelmed by it. They're not going to play enough games to get – I mean, a team would have to go undefeated and just destroy everybody in their league. But don't forget, the Pac-12 is a league that most people consider below the American Conference right now. And that's going into the year, and now they haven't played in a long time. They've kind of out of everybody's memory, and all they're going to do is play each other. So I don't see a path for – I mean, I'm sure there is a path. It's got a lot of sand spurs and, you know, limbs to climb over. There is probably a path, but I don't see it to get to the college football playoff. Michigan's a 3.5-point favorite at Indiana. Indiana's undefeated. I think Michigan bounces back. I would take Michigan, and that would be, almost a lock bet. West Virginia getting 6.5 at Texas. Texas was my big upset pick last week. I was proud of it. I don't get many right, but I got that one right. Pitt, 2-point favorite over Florida State. I don't even know if it's worth negative rooting this week on that game. Because FSU, I mean, what are they? If they beat Pitt, does that mean, oh, they're back? I don't think so. But I still probably will. Penn State, this is interesting. Penn State at home, 0-2, is a 24-point or 25-point favorite over Maryland. And I don't think Maryland's anything special. You know, Tagovailoa is their quarterback. Talia. They're okay. They won a big game last week. Penn State's 0-2. I don't know if an 0-2 team has ever been a favorite by 25 points within their conference. Vandy's been in this conference a while, so maybe or Arkansas, you know, under Chad Morris. Maybe, so maybe that did happen, but it does seem crazy. Two more games I wanted to talk about. Tennessee, a point and a half favorite over Arkansas. That, to me, is a game I have no idea. You know, there's always, it seems like every week there's one game I have no idea who's going to win. That one, I have no idea. If it was in Knoxville, I'd feel pretty confident picking Tennessee. But it almost feels like the Vols have been forgotten. You know, they went from, oh, watch out for Tennessee this year. Watch out. The Vols won their first two. That made it eight in a row. And then the last three games, they've just gotten destroyed. And Kentucky was one of the teams that destroyed them. And then the other one is the Vanderbilt-Mississippi State game, which is really, you know, it's going to be torturous for anybody to watch. Because Mississippi State can't do anything right offensively, and Vanderbilt can't do anything right offensively. What amazes me, though, is Mississippi State's a 19-point favorite. Mississippi State hasn't scored 19 points since its opening game. And I know Vandy's not any good and could very well go 0-10. The over-under is 46.5 on this game. I don't think Vandy's going to win this game, but I sure as heck would take them and take those 19 points. Anyway, all right, let's get to what you're waiting for. I know, three things.
It's time for three things.
Number one, I was kind of excited last night because there were six Maction games on all the various ESPN networks. And I'm like, hey, man, this is all, you know, we miss the Mac. And then you start to watch the games and you go, I don't really care who wins. I don't really care what's happening. I watched a little bit of McElwain's game. I don't even know who won. I didn't even stay up for it. Although I think I did stay up, but I didn't watch any more of it. It was tied 27 all in the third quarter. But it's just, I, as big a college football fan as I am, if I don't care who wins the game, I don't want to watch it. Not especially not this year. For some reason, even more so this year. Number two, the NBA has settled on when to have its season start and when the draft will be. It is going to be weird, though, for players who declared for the draft to be drafted, and then a week later, the team that they left is starting to play basketball. In college, I'm talking about. That's just going to be weird to have the draft that late. But the thing is, I remember thinking about this the other day when they announced it. I was into the NBA playoffs. I was so into them. I thought they were fun to watch. The games were great for the most part. I enjoyed the heck out of them, even with no fans, even with you know, the bubble and everything, and it worked out really good. Even with the stories that kept coming out about guys doing stupid things in the bubble. But let's face it, when they start playing again, I'm not gonna be watching. Because I don't care. It's football season. I'll watch. You know when I'll watch? When the playoffs start again. And that'll be a long time from now. And number three, some good NFL games this week, and I'm looking forward to watching them. You know, the NFL has been interesting in that they're really struggling with COVID. You're seeing more and more games be affected by it. You're seeing more and more teams shutting down their facilities. Again, they're not in a bubble. They're in the real world. I wonder if they'll get to a point where they'll say, "Look, hey, we're going to create these bubbles, and we can't continue going on like this." And that's the way I feel about the NFL, kind of like I do about the college football season. Like I kept telling people, "Don't look at the finish line. Don't worry about the finish line. Just get through this week." And that is true. But now I'm at the point where I'm like, man, I hope I'm looking at the finish line because I want this season to get done. Not that I don't want to watch football. Not that I don't want it to continue, but I want there to be champions crowned without it getting shut down at some point. So there's part of me that does. I'm Marty Feldman. I got one eye on the finish line and one eye on this week. If you don't know who Marty Feldman is, look it up. All right, that's going to do it for this week's Duly Noted Podcast. Thanks to Chip Towers. We'll be back next week on Tuesday, and we'll talk about the Florida-Georgia game. Who knows what I'll be talking about? I mean, who knows? Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for clicking on. Till next time, I'm Pat Dooley, the sports columnist of the Gainesville Sun. I am deep, I'm way back, and I am out of here.